Radha Radha Maharaj. In Prema Bhakti Chandrika, it was there in Guru Tattva. They were explaining about relationship between disciple and guru. They were cautioning about how disciple should be cautious of the relationship between guru and disciple, because even demigods interfere with that relationship and they diminish the relationship between the guru and disciple. So what is the then what to speak of people in general? So there Narottam Das Thakur was cautioning the bhaktas to be very careful, to be careful how to protect that relationship with the guru. So my question is, how should we be careful?
You're saying that the guru-shishya sambandha, because it's such a rare and such a rare and special relationship among all the possible available relationships in this world, it's very rare and very special. Rare because rarely any human being even receives a guru. And very special because only by that relationship with guru and disciple will the jiva get moksha? Dharmart ka moksha. Our goal, of course, is not moksha, but prema. Whether we're reborn, it's okay. We're reborn or we go to Gokul Vrindavan. If we have prema and we're absorbed in the prema seva and remembrance of Radha and Govinda Yuga, then we don't mind heaven or hell. So therefore, when one has something very rare and very special, that means it's very valuable and must be protected from thieves. So thieves come in the form of our thoughts. Our own mental thoughts may create all kinds of ghostly ideas or wrong conceptions about guru. And they may come in the words of other people in the environment, social disturbance. Or if he's mentioning that the demigods, the devatas, they may put impediments or blockages in front of the devotee to interfere with or disrupt his relationship with guru. I don't know what more it says. I don't remember the whole purport there. But what I can understand is this particular level, I think there's different levels where different disturbances come into play. So as far as the devata is disturbing a sadhaka in his relationship with the guru, I don't think they would be concerned until the sadhaka becomes very advanced. When the sadhaka becomes very advanced, because the devatas, when they see any sadhaka, spiritualist, whether they be a bhakta or a jnani or a yogi, when they're making sufficient spiritual advancement, they are wondering, and they themselves are fearful, does this yogi or jnani or bhakta want to take over my post? They feel threatened. Otherwise, why would they send any disturbance or any obstacle? So the demigods, the devatas rather, they can affect, they would probably, I would understand, they would try to play havoc more with the very advanced devotees to disturb their further progress. Maybe from the level of bhava to prema, they would create some impasse or obstacle. So your question is how to protect that relationship. Is there any answer given in that purport? It just said you must protect. So how do they say?
By the help of sadhu, guru,
and scriptures. Sadhus, guru, saints, and scriptures. I can read it now.
Well, no, what you're saying, you protect the relationship by always hearing from sadhus that are glorifying guru tattva and explaining the significance of the position of the guru in relationship with the disciple. So guru, shastra, and sadhu, and hearing the guru himself explaining about who is guru and what is guru. And then hearing from the scriptures, because there's so many wonderful statements about the guru. I mean, anywhere you open any book, they're glorifying the guru. There's statements in the Chaitanya Charitamrita that says that guru is more powerful than Krishna. Because if someone offends Krishna, the guru can save him. But if someone offends a guru, then no one can save him. So, and Krishna is more merciful. The guru is more merciful than Krishna. Even it said, Krishna says, my mercy potency is with him. So when we read these scriptures, or hear from guru or sadhu discussing the principles of guru tattva and guru shishya sambandha, then that will increase our understanding. To have appreciation and to have a solid appreciation in a relationship, and to have a solid relationship, there must be a strong foundation of knowledge. So that's why they're saying that the relationship becomes strengthened and powerful by hearing from sadhu, shastra, and guru. Hearing what? Hearing the glories of guru. You're reading the Bhagavatam. Guru told you to read Bhagavatam. So you read first canto, second, third, fourth. Now you read seventh canto about ashram dharma. Brahmacharya ashram dharma, sannyasa ashram dharma. And all these things. How to conquer kam, krodh, lobh, moha, matsarya. And the triguna. And all different kinds of things. Then he said all these things can be conquered. He said, etat sravam guru bhakti purusha yanjasa jayat. Seventh canto, chapter 15, verse 25. Said all these obstacles, these are all obstacles. Everyone faces these obstacles. Illusion, lamentation, hunger, thirst, sleep, and then anger and lust and envy and greed and intoxication and madness and pride and all these obstacles and contaminations we face as living beings and as sadhakas. So the guru, by guru bhakti, a person can very quickly, yanjasa jayat means very quickly he or she can attain victory and perfection. So I have to be very devoted to my guru and very loving to my guru. Because many people are, when we talk about contemporaries or friends or individuals in the social environment upsetting or interfering with the relationship with guru, they're doing that out of envy. Because if one's mind and heart is pure, and he meets anyone who has the fortune to have a guru, they will be very happy. And they say, oh, you have a guru, you're very fortunate. Do you feel that fortune in your life? And the person says, yes. And your guru and your relationship, you feel very happy? And I said, yes. Oh, I'm very happy for you, that's nice. This is the pure-hearted person. But unfortunately, the environment, people aren't so advanced, so they say, oh, who is your guru? Because the first person never asked. He said, do you have a guru? He didn't say, who is he or she? What is their name? Because he thought, if you have guru, you're saved. If not this life, then next life, you'll be saved, you'll be emancipated, you'll be liberated. You'll go to God. And if the person doesn't have a guru, then you can say, why? Why you have no guru? You're a human being. Are you interested in God? Are you interested in the truth? Yes. But I haven't found a guru that satisfies me. I haven't found a guru that inspires me to surrender. He said, have you? And then the other person listening will say, have you met many gurus? No. I've seen some lectures. I've heard some lectures on YouTube. And then the person will say, I think you should endeavor more to find your guru. Even though that person is speaking, may be a guru himself, but he's not saying that. He's just saying you should endeavor more. Because I have a guru and my friends have guru. And I know what my life was like without guru. And so that's why I'm compassionately encouraging you to find a guru to take shelter and surrender to. Because it not only will change the course of your life, but it will change your attitude and the condition of your mind and heart. Your mind will become peaceful. And your heart will become joyful because the guru will link you with God. And when the jiva is linked with God, then his bliss begins to grow. His bliss begins to grow. Pramanda Brahma Tekon Bhagavan Jeev Guru Krishna Prasade Pai Bhakti Lata Beej. That Bijama Bhakti means the seed of love, atom of bliss. So this is the great treasure that the Guru places in the heart of the disciple. The seed of love and the atom of bliss. So that love and that bliss increases as one surrenders more and more to Guru and serves more and more. And you become oblivious. In America, they used to have a phrase, water on a duck's back. You know, duck. You know, duck? Wah, wah, wah. They have an oily coating on their feathers. Very oily skin or so. And their feathers are like that. So they sit out in the rain by the side of the lake and they're just quacking away, talking to each other. Wah, 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 wah. Everyone's under their umbrella, under the tree, and all the human beings are avoiding the raindrops because we don't have that kind of body. So they aren't disturbed by water, either under their belly or on their back. No disturbance. So much rain can come, and that's okay, nice. Thousands and thousands of kilos of rain can fall on their back. So this is the tolerance of the sadhu. That's why one is convinced about his guru, or one is convinced in any relationship, he can never be shaken, no matter how many disturbing words he may hear. Someone may be married, and some envious, troublemaking person may come and say, oh, you know, I saw your wife. She was flirting over here. She was flirting here with this man, this and that. And so the husband, if he's completely convinced and sure of his relationship and faith and loyalty of his wife, he'll simply say, okay, that's nice. Thank you for telling me. Anything else you can say? No. Okay, then. Goodbye. Go your way. That's why in a Kali Yuga, if you can, those fortunate people that God blesses, he allows them to live alone and be peaceful and happy in their bhajan. And other people, they want to company. So they have husband or wife, they get married, and they have family. And in this stage of Kali, practically, my Gurudev, he often tells me when I go sometimes here and there, and just for fun, so to speak, he says, why are you going here and there? Don't go anywhere. You'll hear this and that, and you'll get, change your mood. You come here, you stay, you come to me. And but I'm a little restless, so sometimes I go meet some sadhus. Or they come here without invitation even. So if you understand, by Shastra, you understand who is the guru, what have I received, what has been given to me, then you'll value it like the greatest treasure. And people, thieves always want to, if you have a treasure, many thieves want to come. So people steal out of greed, or they may steal out of envy. People do harm to others due to greed or anger or envy. So someone that's why I said earlier that other so-called devotees, if they see you're blissful and you're happy, so we are so happy. Oh, we took initiation. Oh, no, you know, this, that, blah, 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 blah. Oh, yeah, oh, now I'm not happy. Why? So now they're happy because they made you unhappy. So that's why one should be sure. And Hari Bhakti Vilas, Sanatana Goswami Pad, he tells the, I don't see in the commentary, his own commentary, nor have I heard, but it's been postulated that it could mean that. He says that one should, the guru should, or vice versa, the guru and disciple, but it says the guru should examine or associate and examine the prospective disciple for 1 year. At least 1 year, or up to 2 or 3 or 4 years. So it's been postulated that these different time factors are related to the varna of the shishya. that if he's in the fourth varna, or the lowest varna, in the social system, if he's a Shudra, then he may be coming back around with the Guru for 4 years before he's given initiation. This is what's told in the ancient Puranas, and it's repeated there in Hari Bhakti Vilas, which is our Gaudiya Vaishnava Smriti. How individual gurus apply that and how they operate, that's up to them, and that's their individual prerogative. Because elsewhere in the same book, it says that a guru, and other shastras also, that although these are the standard formularies and requisites that one should generally observe, exceptions are permitted because the guru is transcendental and he's guided by God, Chaitanya Guru Paramatma. So therefore it says that the guru can initiate anyone anytime, irregardless of jati or kaladeshan patra, nakshatra, Shubhadin or Mangal Nakshatra, anything. Doesn't ordinarily all these things are looked into to adjust everything in a very positive and proper way. But if he's riding on a, let's say, modern example, the guru is riding on a bus with someone and he meets someone very nice, sits on the seat next to him, and they talk for some time, and then he may initiate him. We have right in front of our eyes in our own shastras the Brihad Bhagavatamritam. And Gopu Kumar was a young boy, 9-10 years old, playing and taking care of the cows in the Govardhan and by the Yamuna. Yamuna used to come here. And some wandering sadhu came through and sat a few minutes with this cowherd boy and gave him Gopal mantra. Somehow he got inspired. So he was fully proper and correct in doing it that way. He didn't wait for 1 year or two or three or four, hardly 1 minute. I didn't give any instructions about the mantra devata or the mantra dhyan or chandas or anything. He just said Kalim Krishnaya like this and he was gone. I was in some kind of ecstatic moment of mercy. He called this boy to his side and he spoke 3 times in his right ear the sacred Gopal mantra that's glorified in the Gopal Tampati Upanishad and is the most popular Vaishnav Diksha mantra throughout all history. It's mentioned in Narada Pancharatra, Brahma Samhita, the very beginning of creation. Brahmaji himself got the 18-syllable Gopal mantra. Very powerful, unlimitedly powerful, because it's Krishna, Govinda, and Gopal. They're all there. So this is a matter of love. It's like you can ask the question, how do you measure love? Can you break true love? Never. If there's true love, you can never break it. I remember when I first joined in that spiritual mission I was in 1975 in America, and many people joined and many people left all around me, right, left, right, people on the right-hand side and left-hand side, they just disappeared and never saw again. And I used to think sometimes when I was standing in front of Thakurji and Thakurani, Radharani and Krishna, I would pray to them. I would say in my own way, I say, oh, hey Bhagavan, hey Krishna. So all my friends and my new devotee friends, they're coming and going and quitting, or whatever you say, blooping. They have this term, bloop. Bloop. You throw a rock, and the rock is flying in the sky and is having a good time, then comes down and goes in the lake. When it goes under the water, it makes the sound, bloop. So the person is flying in the sky of kirtan and sankirtan and prasadam and haribol. And somehow he comes down and lands in the Bhava Sagar. He gets liberated by the mercy of the association of devotees and guru. He flies in the sky of Krishna Bhakti, and sometimes he crashes into the ocean. His spacecraft crashes into the ocean and makes a sound, bloop. So he said, where is Krishna Das? Oh, Krishna Das blooped. I remember when I first heard that, I said, blooped? What is blooped? Because there's a whole jargon there in the mission. They have their own special words with special definitions. Like lawyers have one type of language and doctors have another type of language. And computer people that are on computers, they have all these things. Where's the widget? Where's the digit? Where's it? They don't know what they're talking about, but they know, oh, the window, this window, and that window. Look, open a window. Okay. I open two windows. Oh, I open two windows. Well, I open all the windows in the house. Now I'm freezing. Close the windows. Okay, doing, doing. You know, delete, you know, upload, download. I mean, this is the jargon of the age. Hardly I know the surface of half of what it all means. Macros. What's up? And this and that. So at that time, I was standing before Krishna and Radharani, and I said, "Oh Bhagavan, hey Krishna, I don't care if everyone in this temple bloops and everyone in this temple leaves. I'm never going to leave your service. I don't care what happens. Whether this whole temple closes and I'm out on the street as a beggar, eating food out of a trash can or whatever, I'll never stop chanting Hare Krishna. I'll never stop serving you, no matter what." So I had this type of sankalpa and this type of resolve. And I still have it. And it's going on and on. And it'll never stop. You know, it doesn't matter. I don't care of anything externally, what happens. So I'm saying that to try to transmit that type of resolve and that type of determination into the tender field of your consciousness, that you can have such a determined resolve. It's a challenging world. We're living in a challenging world because challenge means fight. Fight means opposition, duality. This is Kali. Kali is about division, not unity. It's about fighting, not harmony. It's about hatred, not love. It's about envy, not about appreciation. This is a Kali Yuga. Better no friends than a bad friend. So-called friend is always good. If it's a friend, then it's good. If it's not good, then he's not a friend. Friends will encourage me in the relationship with my wife and my family and my guru and my business, everything they will encourage. Because just to be living in this body, there's so much discouragement automatically. So much challenge. The physical challenge, the emotional challenge to exist as a being in this Kali Yuga. Everyone has personal issues with their body and personal issues with the environment and personal issues with other bodies in the environment. But to transcend that and to rise beyond all that and just be concerned with your personal relationship with Guru and God, this is the essence of success for the genuine sadhaka. Actually, the fact is that if someone has guru, guru is everything. Everything in one's life. And if someone tries, you can apply, if you want to get fanatic about guru relationship to some extent, then you can read Vrindavan Mahimamrita and take out, substitute all the words Vrindavan for guru. If someone tells me to leave Vrindavan, I'll cut out their tongue. If someone tells me to leave my guru, I'll cut out their tongue. If someone tells me I should come over here, then I'll just reject them or whatever. It was very excessive, exaggerated language. Of course, we would never do any of those things, but he's showing his fanatical attachment to Vrindavan, no matter what. Because, like, someone gets married and he thinks the lady he marries is very nice and very beautiful and he loves her. And someone else comes, he should see, oh, he accepted this lady as his wife and he loves her. That's very nice. So only an evil person, evil Kali Yuga type person would try to disturb that. Oh, your wife's not nice, you know, she's just that. What's the point? What's the value? So that's why Bhaktivinoda Thakur, he says it best, do bhajan alone. You go to work, you say, hello, how's everybody? Nice, let's work together. Goodbye. Then you go home. And then you love your family and friends and do your bhakti and stay away from everybody. Because very, very few people read anything about Krishna, and even less people speak anything about Krishna. The very few that read, they can, if they can recall and remember, and if they want to, they can speak something about Krishna, but they don't. And the ones that don't read, they never speak about Krishna, although they have Kantimala and Tilak and very, very nice kurta and very, very nice sari or whatever they wear here and there, you know, gopi dress or whatever the thing is they wear. Clothes, everything looking very nice, but no Krishna katha, no sadachar, no maryada. Maryada means respect for the seniors. That's one meaning of maryada. Actually, a lot of answers to questions come from Paramatma. Of course, when that happens is at a very high level of bhakti, but even the beginning devotees, according to the degree of their sincerity, then Krishna will reveal the way and show the way. But the very highly situated devotees on the platform of ruchi or asakti, they may actually have communication with Paramatma. Any bhakta that's situated in the lower stage of devotional advancement, narta nivritti, which is most of us, or nishta, they can't claim to have any communication with the super soul, although many do. Oh, Krishna inspired me. You often hear this, Krishna inspired me to do this, Krishna inspired me to do that. Don't buy it. It's just their mental projection or their subconscious mind. And they're misinterpreting their subconscious mind, which is full of their subconscious desires, as a confirmation or expression of the actual Paramatma, when in fact it's not. It's simply a concoction. Because the Paramatma, he's resting peacefully. He only wakes up if someone is very, very advanced in bhakti. And anyone else, if they have any notion, any other devotee, less advanced devotee, has some notion or some so-called inspiration or idea, then they should confirm that with guru or shiksha guru or some advanced devotee who can sort out their so-called prarnas and inspirations to see whether they're their own dreams or kalpana or whether they're actual value. So therefore I'm saying when one makes that choice and surrenders to guru and serves, then that degree of genuineness, and Krishna answers questions and shows the way and gives that inner strength and inner attachment and inner conviction. Forget about the devatas being involved. It's just the play of the illusory energy. It's maya. She's not a devata. She's the energy of Krishna. Because the primary activity for maya devi is to keep the insincere away from Krishna. Says in the Gita, Daivyesha gunamai mama maya dharatya mama vivya papadyante maya metam dharantite. Daivyesha gunamai. So this gunamai is daivi. It's transcendental. Everyone's bound by these modes of nature because they're not surrendering to Krishna. But when they become surrendered to Krishna, then the maha maya becomes the yoga maya, and the yoga maya is daivi shakti. Daivyesha gunamai. So the daivi shakti. So this is when one surrenders to Krishna, then the Mahamaya becomes the Yogamaya, and the very energy that takes us away from Krishna starts to push us towards Krishna and link us with Krishna. So therefore, when one surrenders to Guru and serves him, then he starts to get liberated. He comes under the shelter of Krishna, and Krishna helps him and guides him. Stay away from this person. Stay away from that one. Listen to this one. Don't listen to that one. The Bhagavad Gita itself, I think it's 17th chapter or 12th chapter, I think it's 17th. He's talking about who is dear to me. He's Priyosime. Krishna's saying, he's dear to me, he's dear to me. If someone never disturbs the faith of another person, then that person is very dear to me. Bhagavan Sri Krishna is telling in Bhagavad Gita. This is a very important golden rule to live by. don't disturb the faith of another. That's why I'm saying faith in wife, faith in husband, faith in employer, faith in guru. Devotees are basically good, they're well-minded, but they're caught up in this whole survival principle and survival of the fittest, and the social system is, it's very difficult to be a proper devotee in this age of Kali. So many distractions and so much tension in the atmosphere, tension in the environment, and distractions. So everyone's minds are affected by the negativity in the environment and the disturbance in the ethers, by the excess of microwaves and useless prajalpa being projected through the skyways, through the telephones. It's everyone speaking useless nonsense. Everywhere, millions and millions of useless vibrations. So they're orbiting everywhere over our heads and around us and in us. So people's psyches and minds are quite rattled and not very peaceful. So then they just speak anything or say anything without any thought. One lecture, Prabhupada said that an intelligent person, he thinks twice before he says something. That's a pretty significant statement. Because usually all of our conversations or social intercourse is products of passion. You say something, then I immediately say something back without thinking sometimes. And that's a very common phrase. Oh, I'm sorry, I wasn't thinking what I said. People say, oh, I'm sorry, I didn't mean to say that. I wasn't thinking what I said. I wasn't thinking correctly. It means you didn't think twice before you spoke it. Because there's too much, that's why I said people are not able to think twice or not able to think with a cool head or a peaceful mind because of the disturbance in the atmosphere, which I just mentioned. But somehow, you live with your selected, your wife and family, and you find any friends. That's why it says, sajatiya snigda, that we should always associate with like-minded. So you'll find that disciples of one guru don't agree with the disciples of another guru. So what is that? What's the conclusion? One should only associate with his god brothers and god sisters. But then that, even amongst that, then there also can be divisions and problems. So it's the age we live in. It's the age of division and the age of quarrel and the age of argument. Very difficult to find a harmonious, peaceful balance in individual lives or in collective lives where people are grouped together in marriages or whatnot. Jai Guru, Vaiguru.